Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the global headquarters of the 401k Study Group. It is January 6th, 2016, and today is our first show of the new year, and it is a balmy 12 degrees Fahrenheit here in the snack capital of the world, Hanover, Pennsylvania. Very excited to be back. Hope everybody had a great holiday season. Today we're going to be talking about something new, 401k KPIs, K performance indicators, and joining me today from much warmer Austin, Texas, is Mr. Aaron Potichen. Aaron is a retirement plan consultant at CLS Partners and Retirement Services in the growing cultural city of Austin. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chuck. I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on the phone today.
Well, great. So for those folks that tune in, other advisors, folks, you know, scouring the web for retirement resources, Aaron, before we get started and you get into a little bit about you and your firm, let people know how they can get a hold of you. LinkedIn, email, Twitter, phone, what's the best way?
I'd say, you know, check me out on Twitter. It's just at Aaron A. Potichen, A-P-O-T-T-I-C-H-E-N. Just search my name. I guarantee you're not going to find a lot of Potichens. So in our industry, you definitely can't put out a lot of guarantees, but I could probably tell you you're not going to find a lot of Potichens out there. And then you can also check out our website, www.clspartners.com. So those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me.
Great, Aaron. Thanks. So you're a retirement plan specialist. Tell us a little bit about your career before we get into why you're on the phone here and a little bit about the firm that we're going to delve into a little bit with the topic today.
Yeah. So I think probably like a lot of people in our industry, it wasn't an original intention to be in this business. I went to college and ended up getting a degree in political science. And before I was even graduated, was working almost full-time in politics, like everyone else, as a volunteer, and ended up spending 4 or 5 years full-time working in politics. So campaigns, worked for an elected official, and it was actually great experience and preparation for financial services. But as I got deeper and deeper into that career, one of the things I noticed that, one, a lot of politics for me was one step forward, one step back, and in some cases, two steps back. And then second, I couldn't really see a career path that would really be aligned with the life I wanted. But, and so I kind of took a little...
Aaron, you still there? I think we've lost Aaron. So let's just fill until he can give us a call back in. We are going to be talking about the key performance indicators inside of a retirement plan. Largely speaking, there has been a lot of conversation around retirement readiness, financial wellness, and fiduciary, and Aaron's got a slightly different take on that. So while I fill for him until he gets back, just sit tight. Aaron, are you back with us?
I am. Sorry about that. I'm on a landline, but even those apparently go dead every now and again. So,
you know, sorry about that. That's okay.
Just,
that's the beauty of technology.
It is, right? We could talk halfway across the country, but yet still not guaranteed that we'll get a dedicated connection.
So I left you off. You were in politics. It necessarily was, you know, one step forward, two steps back. So how did that get you into financial services?
Yeah, great question. So I really looked and said, you know, this is really idealistic, but one of the reasons I got into politics, I thought, well, is you get to make an impact on people. And I thought, well, I want to keep that same mentality. And at the same time, I was working a lot, I was helping my dad with kind of his investment type stuff and seemed to really like it. And I looked around, I said, well, what other career can I actually step into and hopefully have an impact on somebody's life, as idealistic as that sounds? And what I found was financial services was the closest career that I could get into that was really, you know, aligned with making an impact on people's life. And in fact, I really found it more rewarding because the impact was so much more personal. You actually can get your hands on it, as opposed to politics, where if you get a bill passed, you don't ever really get to see the benefits of it. You know, there's not a lot of satisfaction in seeing a transportation bill passed. You know, so that's kind of, you know, the story of how I got into it. Like a lot of people, I started out in individual wealth management, fell into retirement plan space, and absolutely love it. And it's just kind of what I do, what I live, and probably what I talk about way too much with my wife. But at the end of the day, it's a career I absolutely love.
It's nice to hear that there are passionate people in the industry, especially young folks. And I don't mean to say young meaning new to the industry, young meaning going into this business, especially into the 401k side, as a servant first and a merchant second. That's something that we've always believed in here, that the retirement plan advisor might be a little bit different than the typical wealth management advisor, you know, asset gatherer. A retirement plan advisor, the most of the ones that I know are a little bit different in the way that they approach their business. And that's going to lead me into my next question. So this whole show started as a very friendly Twitter exchange between you and I. And I can tell you, I've never had the pleasure of meeting Aaron. But, you know, we have been connected socially and digitally for a long time, and it was one of those cool interactions that actually spawned what I think is going to be a really good piece of content. Aaron, while you were trying to reconnect, I was doing a little filling, talking about, you know, where is the industry now, and we're right on the cusp of a really big change. Where do you think it's going? But to lead into what we want to talk about, where has the industry been in the past, and why do you think that needs to change?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I started out probably like a lot of people. I got trained at one of the large wirehouses. And, you know, being at one of the large wirehouses, I was in a really big office, and I got to be associated with guys that had been in the business for 30 years and started off when it was truly trying to sell stuff to people and acting as a broker, right? And the idea of being a fiduciary advisor probably didn't even exist. You know, the goal for a lot of those guys was, how much commission can I make? And that was what people were really kind of trained as you know, investors and consumers to really be associated with. The idea of, you know, getting cold called by some guy and pitching a stock idea and then buying it and then that guy getting a commission, that was just part of our, you know, that was part of the world. And then, you know, so I saw those guys, and, you know, a lot of them really had, you know, their hearts were in the right place. So it's not like they were crooks. And then, you know, but at the same time, I've really kind of come into this business. We've really kind of hit this change where it's not about selling product. It's about selling advice. And if I think about one of the things that's really going to change in the future, it's not going to be really how good your advice is or how good your portfolio is, I think. It's going to be your really advisors in the future, from what I could tell, are going to be judged more on the quality of their advice, and, you know, i.e. maybe their content or what they're putting out there. So I think that idea of, you know, the large wirehouse brokerages having better bond portfolios or access to IPOs, I think is really going to start to become less of an issue or a selling point for people. I think you can look at a lot of different indicators and kind of see that. One, you look at how many guys are going independent these days and leaving the big brokerage firms and forming their own RIA because they don't need that huge retail business and all the resources there. They could set up their own shop and have a business that produces as much revenue and makes as much of an impact on their clients as they did when they were at that giant firm. And so I think we're at the cusp of really breaking from that old model and getting to this new model. I think the other thing is people are really focused. You know, I'm in Austin, Texas. Like you said, pretty progressive town, especially for Texas. Super tech-heavy population. And if I go around to any one of these tech companies and I talk to these people, and these are super educated people. They might not have a lot of wealth yet, but they're darn near more well-educated about financial services probably than most other people in previous generations at their age. And if you ask them, well, what do you want? They want a low-cost index-based portfolio, and the only thing that they really want to pay for is advice on what to do. do they set up a 529? How much should they be saving? Should they buy a house, credit card debt, or what have you? So if I look at where we're at as an industry right now, I think, one, if your selling point is really the performance of your portfolio or your ability to select stocks, I think that the days of being able to sell that and get more new clients is probably going to start diminishing in the future. I think the people that will really have an edge are those that are focused on the end results of their client and not the portfolio. At least that's for those that are working with individual clients and then also with plan sponsors and retirement plans as well. But that's kind of where I see this point going. And, you know, that leads into a lot of the things that we'll probably talk about here in a second. But that's where I see it at right now. And so that would lead to a lot of things. So if you're listening to this, you don't have a CFP, or if you don't focus, build your practice about building an individual retirement plan for an individual or for a company, then, you know, what value are you really providing, you know? So
I think that, Aaron, I think you've made some very, very salient points. One is, we're moving away from the product to the advice, more of a consultative or consultative type of role. You know, that's been bandied about. I've been in this business a very, very long time, 20 years plus, and it was talked about 10 years ago, and now I think we're finally starting to see it become more mainstream. And you also started talking about, in your words, the end result, not the portfolio. And for me, that means outcomes. So in the plan sponsor 401k employee-sponsored retirement plan role, for the last 10 years, the only thing that's ever been important have been funds, performance, fees.
Yep.
Not that any of those things are wrong. It's important to pay it to have an ability to select, monitor, and replace the funds in your portfolio. It's important to make sure that the funds you have in there are appropriate for the average level of sophistication for the plan sponsor. It's important to make sure that you have the lowest cost possible fees. But our plan sponsors, and even more importantly, us advisors, are we still focusing on those too much? And if we are, why? And what should we be focusing on as advisors with our plan sponsor clients? And as a plan sponsor, the person running the retirement plan, how should they begin shifting their focus, and what should they be looking at?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to three things, and this applies not only to advisors, but probably also plan sponsors, and then I would say the industry overall. So one, I think one of the issues we have in stopping everyone from moving to probably this next level of how you would deliver advice to plan sponsors is, one, it's the financial advisor community. And let's be honest, I go to a lot of 401k conferences. I'm definitely the average age is much older than me. And I think if I look at a lot of those guys, more than likely, a lot of them started off in the individual wealth management business, and probably a lot of them started off as stock jockeys. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not putting that down by any means. But that industry has a very deep roots in being very good at selecting funds and also then banging on, providers for fees. So I think one of the problems is our industry, the advisory community, retirement plan community, still relies too much on, hey, I'm really good at picking, funds. Well, anyone can get access to FI360 or one of the other tools for $1,200 a year and be just as good as you. So let's be honest, that's not a real advantage anymore. I think so. One, too many people are just selling that. I think the second thing is that the industry overall. So, I think maybe this is more record keeper related, I would say, but also probably it's pushed on by advisors. But the industry as a whole has really kind of dug this belief into plan sponsors that, hey, their plan's a success if it grows. So if your plan went from $5 million to $10 million this year, congratulations across the board. You've done a great job. Well, to me, that really doesn't make a difference. Because if you went from $5 million to $10 million, that doesn't necessarily mean the result of that 401k plan, which, again, the 401k plan exists for your employees to be able to replace their paycheck with the assets in that plan. That's all it is, right? I mean, maybe it's used as a recruiting tool. Maybe it's used to a retention, right? But at the end of the day, that purpose of the 401k plan is to help people replace their paycheck or even decide to work less if they can. So the industry, though, has kind of taught plan sponsors, hey, if you get your plan bigger, not only will you maybe get better services, you get an individual account manager at your record keeper, maybe you get lower fees or you get access to a better menu of funds. And so, you know, I meet with plan sponsors. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're really, really happy. Our plan went up by $2 million this year. I'm like, well, you know, the market was up maybe 20% or so, let's say. That's probably why your portfolio grew so much. That doesn't mean you guys all deserve a medal, you know. So I think our industry is a little bit to blame for that. And then lastly, I think it just has a lot to do with inattentiveness. I think it comes down to, again, inertia and people not wanting to really focus on this. And I think that's related to just a bunch of different things. You know, in the past probably 2 or 3 years, those that are really charged with managing a 401k plan, the plan sponsor at the end of the day is probably your HR manager, maybe your CFO, or someone that's in kind of a human capital management capacity at these companies. And if you talk to them and ask them what's been your biggest headache over the past few years, across the board, more than likely, everyone will say Obamacare. How do they deal with that? How do they manage that? And so if you ask them, you know, what's going on, that's where their focus has been on. And, you know, if we take outside of that, the other reason why companies probably don't want to pay a lot of attention to this is because the amount of resources, i.e. money, they have to put towards a 401k isn't a lot. I mean, if a company's not giving a company match, they don't necessarily have to pay any fees, maybe outside of an audit, right? So there's not a lot of resource drain that's happening with the 401k, and many times some people even look at it as kind of a pain in the butt to deal with the 401k. So I think, again, you know, the inattentiveness or maybe, you know, not caring or really having a firm grasp on that. But at the end of the day, three issues going on today is advisors leaning too much on the fact that, one, they're good at picking funds. Let's be honest, a lot of people are good at picking funds. That doesn't mean you're the Warren Buffett of picking funds for 401ks. Two, our industry has kind of tailored and taught plan sponsors that bigger is better. So just get bigger however you can. Three, an inattentiveness from maybe plan sponsors, maybe advisors, but probably mostly plan sponsors in taking the 401k plan more seriously. So if we look at those are kind of the issues, what's some counter ways to really look at this thing? Well, number one, what I would say is today, in today's day and world, you know, if you shouldn't sell on fees and you shouldn't sell on funds. Your number one job as an advisor should be to hopefully compress down those fees and those quality of funds that your clients are getting. If you're not already doing that, then you're not just doing the basics of your job. I kind of look at it as, I just started this workout program, and part of the workout program has got the basics. And if you can't even do the basics, then they don't even want you doing the program at all. So I look at doing quality fund analysis and then fighting for your clients with the record keeper to get as low a fees as possible as just entry-level stuff. That's table stakes. If you're not doing that, then what are you doing? You know, it's only a matter of time before I eat your lunch or somebody else will. So number one, you got to be cognizant of that. And then if we move on to what should they be focusing on? Yes, you got to focus on the funds, and yes, you got to focus on the fees, but what are you going to do to separate yourself? I think it comes down to kind of three things. You need to start building in what I've kind of termed these key performance indicators, these KPIs. And what these KPIs come down to is kind of, I've come in, summed it down to kind of three things. So I'm not going to say I'm the smartest guy in the world, but I do like to keep things insanely simple just because I think I've got too much going on. But it comes down to three things and measuring these three things. And if you can measure these three things and then provide advice and guidance that grows these numbers, then at the end of the day, a plan sponsor can't say you've helped provide value. And if you're providing value, you're going to be able to retain that business, you're going to be able to get more referrals, and you're going to be able to know and separate yourself from the rest of the pack. And so those three kind of KPIs I would advise people to kind of maybe start ingrating into their practice would be, one, what's the participation rate? Are you growing the participation rate, right? So, you know, we had a company we'd work with where, and this is easy to do, right? So with, you know, the tools of automatic enrollment, auto escalation, getting participation rates up is very, very easy these days. So I would tell you, one, are you measuring the participation rate? And are you tracking that to see what advice and guidance, what plan design changes you've made, the types of education, is it increasing that number? And hopefully you're getting it to the point where it's as high as it can be, right? So we've worked with several plans where, you know, they were at 36% participation rate. You know, the average income was $86,000 for these employees, you know, and through plan design changes, I wouldn't say it was related to the education because hardly anybody showed up to the education meetings, went from 36% participation rate to 93%. That's awesome. And so, you know, one, focus on measuring participation rate and then relaying that back to your plan sponsor client on a regular basis as far as what it was and what it is now, and then what happened in between to grow that number. The second number I would urge advisors to really focus on is average deferral rate. And there's a bunch of different ways you can then break that down between male, female, and some different demographic information, but just start with the average deferral rate. Have you grown that average deferral rate number? And again, with the you know, tools that we've got available now with auto-escalation, auto-enrollment, this is easy to get this number up. Same thing, the same plan where we had, you know, went from 36 to 93% participation rate, and the average deferral rate was at the low twos, and now it's hovering around 6%, and they don't even have a match. So I think, again, you know, are you measuring that number as well? And then the last number I would tell people to really keep an eye on is a retirement readiness number. Now, you know, being in the retirement plan advisor space, we don't have access, obviously, to everyone's wealth outside of the 401k plan. But what we can do is measure the retirement readiness. And I, you know, the fact that these numbers have come across or really kind of been created over the past few years, I think is really fantastic. And there's a million different ways to measure retirement readiness. You know, here at CLS, we're lucky in that we've got former plan actuaries that are just insanely smart. These guys, their brains are so on fire, they can't even keep hair on their heads. But, you know, they've been able to help us create some retirement readiness measurement tools. And so we've been consistently using those. And what those tools have been allowed us to do is really look at, see, all right, we're at this point today. 36% of your population is prepared to replace X amount of their income when they reach 65 or what have you, or their Social Security age, you know, PIA age. What is it today? And if we're seeing an increase in that, then that is also helping us. And so I look at those three numbers. You know, are you helping to increase participation? Are you helping to increase the average deferral rate? And are you helping to increase the retirement readiness number? That's what it really comes down to. If you're doing those three things, and if you're making an impact on those three things, I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's hard for anyone to say you should be replaced. And then it's going to be even harder for someone to say, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't be a referral candidate as well. So if you're doing those three things, you know, you're going to be fantastic. And you're also going to make an impact on not only, you know, those employees' lives. I mean, it's going to be tremendous for them. And all three of them are kind of related in a way, but they're also a little bit different. You know, you could have a population where you've got low participation but super high retirement readiness and super high average deferral rates. So what can you do to get that participation rate up? So I don't think you're ever really going to come across a plan where you're knocking it out of the park on all three consistently right at the start. But eventually, if you do these things, if you stay consistent and then you stay focused on the client and the results, you're going to get to a good point at the end of the day. So that's where I would say those are the things I think if you want to be a next-level advisor, you want to start separating yourself from the pack, those three points are the ones you should focus on. And the nice thing is we all have access to the same data. We all have access to the same data. So it's all how do you use it, how you do manipulate it, and how do you communicate it back to your client, the plan sponsor, to let them know this is what we should do today because we want to get here and this is what we need to do. So at the end of the day, that's really what my belief is. We've done that for a variety of clients and seen really great you know, results and made an impact on a lot of these companies across the board. And I would just tell you, if you're not doing that, you're in really yesterday's crowd, and that's going to be hard to get clients tomorrow. So you need to kind of be prepared for that. So that's kind of where we are at today and where I think people need to be as well.
Aaron, I think it's interesting that, you know, there's different roles you can take when you work with retirement plans, and the role that you – seem to really take ownership of is the participant advocate. There are a number of advisors, as a function of a percentage, that only want to do plan sponsor-facing activities and really don't want to do individual hand-to-hand combat enrollment meetings and gathering up all the information and do that. So that's a different mindset. That's the participant advocate. I think you're right. No, the average age of the financial advisor today is 54.7 years old. We go to the same conferences or virtually the same conferences, and it's been a theme of mine. I look around and I see more AARP cards than PlayStation Network cards, and luckily I have the latter, not the former.
Right.
But it's true, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, like you've said. You know, we're not casting doubt or blame on the way these types of advisors do business, but there's a new dawn coming, and if you don't embrace it, you're going to get run over by it. You know, and I think you're right. You know, when you talk about the attention that has to be paid to a retirement plan, when you have to worry about premiums and compliance with health insurance, workers' comp, general liability, property and casualty, the retirement plan is a function of the overall benefits package. If you don't have a match or a profit-sharing plan, is really small. And I think that may be partly true, but I think the other issue is that, you know, we need to be approaching plan sponsors with ideas that actually help them get their people ready for retirement. You know, my business partner, Chris Richardson, has always said that the 401k is a really good indicator. It's sort of the canary in the coal mine. If you've got a really vibrant employee base and a really vibrant employer and a really vibrant retirement plan, that's good for everybody. I have a friend of mine down in North Carolina who says, Chuck, you know, I can only control so much inside of a retirement plan. I can't control the market. I cannot control how profitable your business is, and I cannot force your people to save. What I can do is all of the things you're talking about. I can try and educate them. I can build a plan that's got auto features. We can go in and we can talk about what you're really going to need and do one-on-one advice and education. So I think it's a mind shift. I think it's one of those things that people really need to take a look at. Hey, you might not be able to implement every single one of them with every one of your retirement plans, but if you just broach a new way of thinking, it might endear you more to the plan sponsor, but more importantly to the participants. So we've only got about a minute and a half left, and I want to thank you for being on. If you're interested in getting a hold of Aaron, can you give out your contact information again before I let you go?
Yeah, I would just say Twitter at Aaron Potashin, or you can just visit our website, www.clspartners.com.
Aaron, thank you very much for kicking off 2016 with some really good new ideas. Advisors, start talking to your clients about 401k KPIs. Reach out to Aaron if you want to bounce some ideas off of him. He's an open-minded guy. He's sharing his secret sauce with anybody in the advisory community who wants to listen. So just make sure you do that. So, Aaron, thank you very much for being on the show. Happy New Year, and I hope 2016 is great for you and your family.
Thanks, Chuck. Have a good one.